I have some new friends, Tyrion confessed. You won't like them at all. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, your source for Game of Thrones, the living card game content, formerly known as Two Champs and a Chump. We rebranded for the second edition. I want to give a huge thank you to George R. R. Martin, FFG, and to you, our fans, especially those of you that support us on Patreon. I don't do that enough. We've got big news. I want to make sure it's always in front of people this whole summer. We're hosting nationals in Springfield, Missouri again. This year, they're known as the Grand Championships. We've rented a castle. There's Lord of the Rings. There's board games. There's going to be so much more. Head on over to www.conflictatthecastle.com to find out more. If I just kept digging hard enough and far enough in the books, I would find the perfect quote for tonight's episode.
And you're right. I don't like them. I don't like them at all.
Oh, see, I was just directing that toward the listeners, but man, it's just an added bonus that co-hosts don't like them either.
Oh, they're going to love Bob. Bob's going to make great impressions.
Just like he does every time he tries to stir up debate on Facebook. Which, I mean, admittedly, has been a little while. The Facebook group can only withstand that every 6 months or so.
Oh, I type out a lot on that Facebook. I just happen to delete it all before I press send.
That's probably a lie.
He's not opinionated at all. So we don't have anything to worry about.
Oh, I don't know why I invited him on here then. Being unopinionated makes for really bad radio. Oh, well, okay. Now that they've both said a little bit of something and we've given all kinds of grief, let's introduce what's going on this week. This week, I am proud to announce we've got... Yeah, Scott has transferred back to the other week, so they're all East Coast. And this week, we effectively have a whole new team, and we are all Midwesterners now. So, yeah. We are all Midwest on this week now. Been a little while, so I think that'll be good. And we've got both Robert Mixer, now known forevermore as Mixie, and Tyler Phillips with us, who you've probably heard on the show a few more times. Of course, Bob has had some nice runs at several tournaments, and Tyler was last year's Gen Con, that is North American Continental Champion, Joust, that is. So they've both been on a few times, I think maybe two each, something like that. And we thought it would be a pretty good mix. We tried them out. We gave them a test drive, so to speak, and they passed. So we're gonna bring them on and force Kyle to listen to them.
Yay!
Yeah, pretty excited about that. I can tell. Always glad to help out a friend there. So there we go. There we go. I think we're going to settle on some new team names, but we have not figured that out yet. Let's kick it over to this week's topic. Everybody's raring to go, I can tell. That silence is just intense.
I can't wait.
Intense.
I'm just waiting for Bob to start saying shit that's more upsetting than what I said. That's all I'm waiting
for. Okay. Well, let's see what happens here. We've got a lot to cover and only about an hour to do it. Aaron put together a list of about 20 kind of random Thrones questions to answer. There is no chance in hell we were going to get through 20 questions in an episode. So we've split that into two episodes of 10. So we've got 10 we're about to dive into, and they're going to tackle 10 on the other team next week. So for right now, let's see if we can manage to get through 10 of these in about an hour. Whew, this could be tough. Let's see. All right. Question number one. Knights of the Hollow Hill. Where does it work? And how? Okay, so it's sort of two questions lumped into one, but we'll let that slide for now. Does it work? Does it work anywhere?
Who wants to take that one first?
I'll float an idea out, at least. The only place I've seen it played locally is Stark, Knights of the Hollow Hill, trying to do all the attrition-y stuff. Ward and Ramsay and Harrenhal and so on. Is that actually the best option? Is that even a good option?
I personally wouldn't call it a good option.
Jesus, it begins.
I mean, if you are really like pressed of like, man, I want to play Knights of the Hollow Hill, probably that's the best bet. However, I mean, isn't fealty just as good, or substitute any X agenda with Stark right now just better?
Probably. Yeah, I mean, I don't know a whole lot of specific benefits that Knights of the Hollow Hill brings to the table out of Stark. I feel like a lot of that attrition is just kind of used to try and pull you back into things since you didn't have a setup. Man, there's not really any neat plot tricks that they really
matter. Bullshit, you can open Fallen from Favor every time.
Well, yeah, but I meant like
no question
that
asked.
They benefit from more than any other house. Like, yes, any Knights of the Hollow Hill deck can do that. It's just a high gold blank plot at that point.
I mean, also another thing I look at when I look at Knights of Hollow Hill is the gates have all kind of proved to be very effective. Rose Road still probably the best economy, you know, location in the game. Northern Armory is really good. So now you're kind of not being able to run those. If you're running other locations, I mean, a city besieged is everywhere. So now you're pretty much going to get stuck with plot then plus 3 gold. And is that really worth the minus 8 setup that you're losing and the card advantage that you could possibly be getting by digging deeper into your deck with the setup and with the
probably about
gate.
4 cards on average, give or take.
Well, especially with Stark, I mean, they have probably arguably the best setup in the game aside from maybe Targ.
They got them good shuts.
Yeah, they definitely have some good options,
and they have the probably easiest gate to trigger. So now you're losing that card advantage and economy.
I mean, you can still play the gate, right? You just don't get the gold bonus?
No.
You can play. It just says gold. So now you're paying 1 gold for 2 cards, which, I mean, isn't bad. I mean,
it's not good.
It's not great. Yeah. When everyone else is getting paid.
Especially when they've got a lot of other card advantage options.
Ugh. The question I keep circling back to is why you would want to play it when you can play Stark Fealty or Stark Sea of Blood or Stark Crossing instead.
Crossing.
I think those are all better Stark options.
Yeah.
I mean, is there another faction that, you know, I think I saw Martell try to use it once or twice.
Be my question, especially since I know Tyler's played a lot of Martell. Is there some silly Martell stuff that just wants all that reserve? I mean, I say all that reserve. You could play Dorn, but probably don't want to play the Fiefdoms in this deck. But, well.
Yeah, in first head, not to be the old head, you know, it gave initiative, gold, and influence. And I think it worked because you were getting two essentially income sources out of instead as an exchange for your setup. But now that it's hand size initiative gold, it just does not equate to being useful. Like, it's just not enough. Like, maybe plus four gold, maybe like essentially free arbor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now you're talking, that'd be legit. But three is not enough to be your whole econ base and let you ignore econ cards. And right now, like Bob was saying, that's the best way to draw cards. So it just doesn't work. There's not enough pros to outweigh what is a huge con in a very fast meta.
That's very true. I think the meta is also dictating what you can and can't do right now. I think if you're going to have fun, yeah, make a Knights of the Hollow Hill deck. If you want to be competitive, I don't think that's the route to go, because I think all the builds have better options than running it. So.
Sorry, listeners out there that really wanted us to say something positive about Knights of Hollow Hill.
Oh, well.
I mean, I think why people are having, you know, the eye candy's nice, right? So you see, you're getting, oh, I don't have to worry about economy, I don't have to worry about hand size, I'm getting initiative bump. In actuality, I don't think it's worth it. Go ahead, Bob.
I feel like Knights of Hollow Hill, like, forces your plot deck. It's like, okay, like Kyle said, now you get to play Fallen from Favor, which is great. 10 gold, opening turn, you know. And then it's all like, well, now I have to play a couple of resets because they're going to get a lot of characters out. And then it's all like, well, I could play Naval. I could play a Political Disaster. So now you're playing like all these plots that, in my opinion, just really aren't that good. But they kind of fit that whole, well, I don't need a whole lot of location, so I'll play Political Disaster. But now it's like, now your plot deck's built. Like, it's already built without you putting any thought into the plot deck. And I think that's also another issue with Knights of Hollow Hill.
Well, speaking of plots, I think at least some of that thought, that the hope that folks had for Knights of the Hollow Hill is maybe partly based on how it was in first edition, and either those of us with memories of playing with it then or us just hyping it that much. But the, let's say, the resets of second edition are not nearly as strong in the context of the game as they were in first edition. So there's another tool there that is hampered, even aside from the other tweaks to the resource base and so on. Okay.
Yeah. Anything else on good old Knights of Hollow Hill? I did enjoy the alternate art version of that card from Gen Con. The little flip side art. That was pretty nice.
What's on the other side of it?
It was like an alternate art of like some guys just kind of sitting around. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It looked pretty good.
Wasn't Greg drinking with his buddies like it should have been?
Yeah. what a letdown. What a letdown. Okay. Well, let's hop to question number two then. This one. Also Hollow Hill themed, but this time just Hollow Hill, not Knights of. So,
Ooh. Yeah,
Hollow Hill, is it worth it to drop boils to play that? And if so, where and why?
I mean, Free Folk uses it.
Yeah, Free Folk 100% does, because they literally can't play a loyal character. So why not just search the top 10 of your deck?
I think Bear's had some success with it too. More Bear Shadows theme decks.
Yeah.
I've seen it played a little bit there. I don't know
Yeah, I think like the biggest thing with that is, okay, which faction do you think you can win without their loyal characters? So, I mean, Greyjoy, you need their loyals. I would probably say so. Stark, you need their loyals. I mean, Baratheon does still have Big Bob and Stannis, but I guess it's possible to win without those.
Lannister, Shadows probably runs it. Just because you don't have dudes out.
Yeah, I think most Shadows decks, especially like Kingdom of Shadows decks that are pulling in a ton of non-loyals. Yeah,
now that's that'd be a good call for that.
And like Kyle's saying with Lannister, if you've got Clever Feint available so that you can put some loyal stuff back into Shadows so that you can then trigger Hollow Hill, that starts looking pretty tempting.
Yeah, I mean, like, for the 2 gold to, you know, get a character, I mean, that's pretty efficient. So it's definitely a good card. It's just trying to figure out, okay, which factions can, you know, maximize that and get away with not using their loyals. Maybe even Targaryen. I mean, if you think you can win without Khal Drogo or Dany, I mean, those are just ones I'm thinking off the top of my head. But yeah, I definitely see the Shadows deck utilizing that card.
Even in just a lot of Martell, I think, could probably get away with it. With stuff kind of bouncing in and out. And like a ton of those characters that you want to play, Orphans and Messengers and whatnot, none of them are loyal. So I think you can fiddle around with it. I think the last Martell deck I was playing regularly back during like Store Champs, I think the only loyal was the Obara that returns to hand to drop somebody in, the Arianne Light. And okay, turns out it's real easy to make sure she's not in play in Dominance. So,
yeah, quickly looking over Lannister cards, you have Cersei and Tyrion. And that's it.
For the Shadow stuff.
Yeah, and that's if you run... loyal Lannister characters you give a shit about. I guess Big Tywin, but I don't think he's in a lot of decks these days. Maybe a one of.
Especially if you're doing Kingdom of Shadows, I don't know that I pay 8 gold for him, you know?
Yep. So that leaves Shadows Tyrion and Shadows Cersei as the two that you care about. And that's it.
Yep.
I mean, like, really, even, I know they haven't been played a whole lot, but Tyrell actually doesn't have that many loyal characters. I think, like,
well,
maybe a dozen or so.
They also
have, I mean, if you really wanted to get, like, yeah, well, I mean, if you really wanted to get, like, an aggressive, like, you know, knight deck or something like that going, I think that would be possible if you really wanted to try something like that.
Cool. Anybody got anything else that they desperately want to hit on Hollow Hill, or should I transition us to the next one?
I mean, I think just in general, it's like a solid card. I mean, and it's probably something that we'll probably see even a little bit more play, I think.
Yeah, looking at
Tyrell Shadows, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, looking at Tyrell's list, there's not a ton in here that I think, you know, you really care about. I mean, you lose Renly, but there you're going overboard on loyals for his effect. Yeah, especially with, like you said, with knights. The only knight on this list is Sir Colin of Greenpools. So you have to find a way to live without him.
Man, that would be a tough one to sacrifice.
Yeah. Other than that, it's pretty barren on the knight front. Hmm.
You know what? Well, I think there's a card that could be replacing Sir Colin in our next question.
Okay. We kick it over to the next one.
Look at that segue.
So far, maybe so it's good the next question. On time. I like this. All right. Who's the best overlooked box character? Baratheon box there. So Aengai versus Imri versus She-Bear versus Botley's crew.
I mean, Anga, I just replaced Sir Colin. Like, my opinion on this, the most overlooked, would probably have to be Emery. He's the Baratheon guy, right?
Yeah. He's the sack your location, Samuel somebody guy.
I personally think that guy is, I'm not going to call him, like, ridiculous, but he will win games. And, like, whenever I look at cards and when I try to build decks, I always say to myself, will this win me the game? And then I play it.
I mean,
so
as long as you're not playing against Lannister or Greyjoy, and one of those is a pretty strong chance.
I mean, that ability is just so good, though. Like, it will win games, so that's why I think he's probably overlooked. But yeah, I like that guy a lot.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, he's essentially kill to get a third of your win condition. Because you're getting claim, three unopposed, and dominance if you kneel out their board.
Well, yeah, kill and lose your location base to do it. So it better win you the game, or you just lost yourself the game, probably.
But it,
I mean, but you also don't have to go crazy and, like, you don't have to sack everything, you know, sure, all the time. Sure. I mean, maybe if there's, like, even, like, three people on the board, you're like, man, I could really get through, like, three unopposed or, you know, Baratheon with all their power challenges, be like, oh, here comes, like, two power challenges that you can't stop. And there's just, I mean, and he just sits around just waiting, like, oh, anytime I'm going to kneel out your board.
Fun thing to point out is the killing him is the cost. So even if he gets canceled, it's not like you're going to kill him, melt your own board, and then get it blanked. So, like, if you're at the part where you're sacking locations, at that point you kind of know the plan's going to work. You're probably in challenges phase, either going first or they've already gone. Like, you know the situation going into this trigger, and it's not like, and if you are killing off locations, I mean, the effect has gone off. So I think he's really good. I'm with Bob.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, like, the other guys, I mean, they're good. Like, Angai is, like, pretty solid. I mean, he fits that Hollow Hill niche. I mean, anytime you get someone that doesn't kneel to attack is, you know, always good. But I feel like he's already kind of a good character that people are like, oh man, I want to play this guy. So that's why I wouldn't say he's, like, overlooked. I mean, She-Bear, I mean, that three cost spot in Stark is just,
I mean,
way too many.
See, that's what I thought at first, and I thought, oh, this is just more of the same, and, like, it doesn't do much. I don't really care for this. And yet I feel like it's all over the place now since the box came out. I was actually going to give my vote to She-Bear for evidently Stark players liking it way more than I expected.
I mean, it's essentially a zero-cost character, right? The
downside I have...
Yeah, as long as it's not set up.
The only thing that I would say about that is when I'm making a deck with She-Bear, then I want to play Ice, and I want to play other three drops to bounce her in, so now I'm changing my deck, which I think is already pretty solid and pretty tight, and adding other cards that I don't necessarily think Stark needs right now to be effective. So that's kind of the way I look at it as far as, yeah, is she really good? Is she really good in the right deck? Absolutely. But is that the optimal version of the deck you run? I don't know. So,
and, like, how often does it, like, really work that, like, you get out the scout, and then you go search out She-Bear, then you play the She-Bear, and then you drop in another three drop character? And I'm like, man, like, if it worked that way, is it still, like, really that good though? It's like, man, I just, you know, here comes, like, three or four chuds that all have military icons, and it's like, oh, that's great.
I mean, some of them have power icons too, right?
Yeah.
That's true.
But like when you're like you're constructing the Stark deck and it's all like, okay, you have Skagos, so it's like now Summer is like a 2x. You know, Arya is probably a 2x. And so and then you just keep on adding these 3-drop characters to the deck and you're like, oh, you know, was Alysanne. I mean, she's probably like a 1x for the most part. But now it's like, man, now we keep on adding now like Septa Mordain. Oh, I really want her because she has that great synergy with Arya and Sansa. And then it's like, oh, man, now I'm just like full of these 3-drop characters in my deck. So I think that's where some of the issues is. And kind of like what Tyler pointed out, like, I think you could build a deck around her. But is that the best deck that can be played with Stark right now? Or even the second or third or fourth best deck?
I know that Tommy's been playing it with some success in his Sea of Blood deck, and I think maybe it makes more sense there where you're focusing on getting that early military challenge and winning by 5 and playing ice and that stuff. I think it makes a lot of sense in that build, but me, I tend to play more control-ish type Stark, so Stark Fealty, maybe even like Stark Kohar, but maybe you play her in Stark Kohar, I don't know. But to me, I still think that the, you know, Whamma's deck and the Stark Fealty is still top-notch.
And honorable mentions that wonderful Botley's crew. I mean, if you get 2 of them out, you're pretty good. But that would require you to play 2 of these characters in a Greyjoy deck right now. So that makes it rough.
Weren't you trying to play a Greyjoy choke for a while?
Yeah, I tried it. And it failed.
Okay.
I mean, like in that build, I mean, when you was playing like it was like Night's Watch Kraken, and you know you have the White Tree and the meager contributions, and then you have Botley's crews, and it's like, wow, this is great. But then you realize, one, I'm playing some pretty bad cards, and then, but then you also realize like I'm taking away like what they're doing, but I'm not doing anything on my end. Like I was always like short gold, cause I'm playing these, you know, plots that just wasn't that great. And I'm like, oh, I could play like one character a turn and that's about it.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, they're, I mean, all those characters are probably good in the right build. I mean, that's where, and maybe that's what Glazer was kind of getting at, like, you know, trying to find these characters that probably have that unique build. To maybe, you know, get some, you know, people to think about decks with these guys in it. But my vote's definitely for Emery, just because he's probably going to win games more so than the other guys.
Okay. Well, does that send us on to the next one then? Question number 3. Let's see.
Oh, only 3 questions so far?
Yeah, I know, right? Man. We may need to hurry some of these. This one, we had talked about substituting something else in place of this, but I actually think I'm going to go with the question as is so that we can answer this quickly and keep going through the 10. The question was, what's holding Prince That Was Promised back? And I think the answer post Gen Con 2019 is... not much, right?
Ooh, I mean, we should really take about 10 to 15 minutes on this one. What's holding it back? Huh?
Martell Icon.
The only thing that was holding it back was the fact that people weren't playing it out of Greyjoy initially.
Everybody wanted to jump on Baratheon, assuming yeah, all the synergy that was there.
Yep. And then once you realize you can have a untapping Balon twice a turn that can't be blocked and has renown, kind of makes sense.
That sounds pretty reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's just the fact that Balon just triggers it by himself. And there's really not a character out there right now that can just trigger Prince all by himself. So, I guess
except probably... Rattle Shirt.
Oh, well, yeah, a Rattle Shirt. Doesn't, is one of the Stannises, like, take someone out of a power challenge or no?
He gives every, like, what is it, non-king minus one strength or something?
Yeah.
Let me see what all he takes it away from. It's each non-king. It's minus one.
So, I mean,
whether he's in it or not, it's just all the time during power.
Yeah, so he can't really single-handedly just win it. So,
yeah.
So only.
Yeah, and besides, I think the box stance is probably better if you want something for that.
Yeah.
But, like, he probably is the prince in that case.
So,
I mean, then he's great to stand.
Yeah.
But he's not helping you find it.
I mean, I think even the bear decks that made the cut at Gen Con were taking advantage of Prince It Was Promised, though, with the run into the core Roberts and one of the box Roberts, and depending on the matchup, you know, which one you go pull, it kind of makes sense for them that way, too. I thought they used that effectively. So I think Prince is definitely top tier in Greyjoy, maybe tier two in Baratheon. I don't know if there's any real reason to run it out of Martell, but maybe Red Viper Prince. I think some people have been playing that. So, you know, I think it's there already.
Yeah, and I think, like, it's like really those three factions, like Greyjoy and Baratheon and Martell, just because Martell has that icon removal that, I mean, you can, you know, I can't say guarantee it, but you definitely have the advantage on when you can trigger it. So,
yeah. Punch that through.
The biggest issue with Martell is their lack of power icons overall, though, that are, you know, high enough to get it through without committing multiple people to a challenge.
Yeah, they kind of top out at about four strength, right? Yep. Unless you're running core Red Viper, I suppose.
Which is your prince.
Yeah, I mean, I'd play the prince would be the core Red Viper, since he's like your win condition, so.
Okay, well, speaking of getting particular characters, let's go ahead and transition it to, what is this, question number five? One, two, three, four. Yeah, five. So which Greyjoy big character makes the best prince?
I mean, there's really only one prince. So
yeah, we're going to go ahead and go with Cor Balon, and the next question is what?
Boom.
Ouch.
Yeah, I mean,
no love for Serge Asha at all.
Nothing I mean, I play
no Vic.
I play a lot of Greyjoy, and it's never really ever crossed my mind to pick someone else. Like, even if the matchup tries to dictate it, it's like, oh, I'm sitting across from Targaryen, and I know that Victarion's just like a beast against Targaryen. I'm still picking Balon. I mean, that's just me. They burn him, he comes back.
What about
so just for the speed factor, basically?
I mean, the speed is just unreal. I mean, one, you're always probably going to trigger it. I mean, even if you have, like, Vic out and they get out, like, a Second Sons and a Khal Drogo or something like that, it's like, man, I don't know if I can really, you know, trigger these. And Vic already stands himself. So it's all like, do I really want to, you know, not maximize the card, you know, maximize the agenda? So that's where, I mean, it's Balon all day, every day. That getting two unopposed challenges with a two renown and a card.
What about,
I mean, that's just crazy good.
What about against like a Night's Watch, new wall, old wall scenario where you want to make sure you're kneeling their wall every turn? Anything there pulling Vic?
I doubt it. No.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no. Let me think about it. No, nope.
I guess you can always blow it up with your unopposed challenge and steal it.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Having access to the three We Do Not Sows at will, it's like, he's just Rex face right now. And I'm happy for the guy. He needed it. I mean, everyone was all over Euron and Vic, you know, with all their warships, and good old King Balon was just sitting in a solar, like, man, what do I do? What do I do? And then the agenda came out, and he's like, Eureka, I got it. And he told Alanis, and Alanis was like, well, I'm going to bring some warships too, and we're going to just draw a bunch of cards.
See,
and
this is how I know you're making
it. We're going to be...
Balin did not talk to Alanis. He has left her in a tower for the last, like, 20 years.
You know, it was starting to sound good. It was like, really, the pieces was getting put there,
so
then you
close,
had to ruin it, Will.
Maybe
so-
she would have... maybe she would have been drawing some cards earlier in Greyjoy's career. He would have gotten around that tower a little sooner.
Oh, yeah, exactly. We're going to check your reserve on this one. Yeah. Sorry. definitely Core Balon. I mean, anyone else can chime in, but I'm just going to disagree with them. So.
Well, then.
Well, yeah. Nope, you're right.
What do you think? What do you think about the pull-in rattle shirt as your prince? I saw a couple people doing that. I think somebody's doing that Gen Con.
In a Greyjoy deck?
In a Greyjoy deck, running a rattle shirt, and he was their alternative prince.
It seems silly.
But why would you need him over Balin? I mean, they feel very similar, like, evasive roles, right? So what does rattle shirt bring to the table that Balin wouldn't? To the same cost and strength? Nothing.
Good question. That's why I'm asking. I don't know.
Yeah, there's no synergy. I know. Like I'm expressing my baffle.
Yeah. He doesn't get like the Iron Fleet Scout bump since that's Greyjoy only. I mean,
or stealth,
I don't know.
From Great Kraken or anything.
The Great Kraken.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know if that deck did well. So, if they're picking rattle.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're just kind of being fun with it. I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, yeah, because he's not even no attachments, is he?
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, he can take attachments.
Yeah.
He can't use reducers on.
That's the only thing I could think of.
At least the in-house stuff. I don't know. Hmm. I got nothing.
Hmm.
He's not a captain.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He was a wildling captain, though. Man, captain. How great would that be?
Yeah.
Bob's over there sounding skeptical. Like, he wouldn't do that in a heartbeat. Come on. Rattleshirt Prince that was promised if he could Longship Maidenbane. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, negative on that one.
Negative, Ghost Rider.
Oh, well. All right. Well, that probably sends us on to the next question. And this one, I think, is maybe an interesting question, because I'm not sure about, like, I feel like my answer is almost too simple. So I want to see what you guys say. Here it is. How do you play against Red Priest?
Run a bunch of shitty cards.
Is that like the end of the question?
There we go. Kyle's got this figured out.
That's it.
You know, I first played against the Red Priest at Gen Con. I believe his name was Breton.
Oh, yeah.
What was that? Top 16 matchup. And he was playing Baratheon. And I think he had Red Priest, and he had, like, some Seen in Flames. And I was playing Greyjoy, and I just had a bunch of good stuff in my hand. So he had to, like, really choose, like, between good stuff. So, I mean, he took one good card, and I still had four good cards left. So, I mean, that was a good way to play against Red Priest, just have a lot of good cards in your hand. I don't think he really did anything different, though. Like, I mean, like, really, in general, like, what...
Okay, I don't feel so bad about... Because my question, or my thought, was also, I don't think I'd do anything different.
I mean, I think you're going to get into more
trouble playing Baratheon,
trying to play around something like that and set yourself up for a stupid mistake and just trying to play through it. And if they take something, they take something. And maybe you'll get it back if you can kill it or get it out of play. But if not, you just keep going.
Yeah, I mean, just don't probably do something silly like let them take a Drown God Fanatic when you could just, you know, cancel it. But, yeah, I think I would see, like, people being all like, oh, I have, like, you know, maybe two different six drops in my hand. You know, which one do I play? I know he has like the Red Priest or, you know, something like that. And maybe playing like the wrong card. I don't know. I mean, that's a weird question. That probably during gameplay is probably when it's going to make the most sense to make sure you make the right decision. But like just reading the question and thinking about it, you know, here, it's like, I don't think I'd do anything differently. I mean, they have it, and then they're probably playing their Scene in Flames anyways. I mean, you're going to be at a point where you're going to have like a disadvantage because they have hand, you know, control and manipulation. So you just have to know that going into the game that there's a good chance that, you know, some of your stuff's going to get taken out of your hand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and in particular with the Red Priest, like, you're going to get that card back eventually in the course of gameplay. So unless you're playing some silly combo deck and they nab your Brienne and your deck just literally doesn't function without it, I just don't think it's worth worrying about, because either a reset's going to come around or they're going to need to kill that Red Priest Reclaim eventually or something. And you're going to get whatever that good enough for them to take card was back, or yeah, they kill other stuff instead of the Red Priest and you wind up getting, you know, more value because they're afraid of letting you have it back. Like, that's not a terrible spot to be in either.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, just definitely expect 3x like when you're playing against Baratheon, I think. So I wouldn't just, you know, try to change your plans too much while you're playing against it. Just know that something's going to get taken and hopefully you get it back. I think that's about the best way to go about it.
Okay. Well then, on to our next one. So this is going to be which Loyal Shadows combo is the best. So first up, we've got Lannister with Cersei, Bowels of Casterly Rock, Clever Feint, and Underhanded Methods. Then we've got Tyrell with Unexpected Guile, Scheming Septon, Queen of Thorns, Old Town Undercity. Then we've got Baratheon with Shadow of the Throne and Black Cells, Martell with Arion, Ser Garrus, and Shadow City. And then Targaryen with Dragon Pit, Izdar, and in Daznak's Pit. And I feel like from discussions we've had, I'm probably the one that's been playing Shadows the most lately. So I'm going to jump out here to answer this one first. And it may surprise some people. I'm actually going to say that the Tyrell combination of loyal cards is the best. I actually personally don't like them the best for Shadow stuff overall, but I feel like most of Lannister's strength is in the non-loyal cards, whereas Scheming Septon and Old Town Undercity I think are way above some of these other ones, even potentially Queen of Thorns. I'm less sold on Unexpected Guile after playing with it some. But the card advantage and shenanigans that you can pull, moving stuff back and forth with the Septon and Undercity, I think it like wildly outmatches the card shenanigans afforded by any of the rest of these. You know, some of these may look stronger and more interesting when you throw in some of the other non-loyal stuff, but only considering these cards, my vote has to go the Tyrell.
I really agree with you, but I also think that Unexpected Guile is really good. But again, I think it flourishes with, like you said, some of those other cards that are not loyal to Tyrell. But the fact that you can bounce back in a Shadow Priestess, Diplomat, Robert Strong, a Mandon Moore every turn is just ridiculous. Just absolutely crazy. I think Lannister is a close second. I think their card that gives them +1 strength for each card in Shadows is ridiculously efficient. I thought Martell would be better at Shadows, but every time I try to make a Martell Shadows deck, I don't know how to win. and I thought the Tark stuff would be more impactful, but I think it's just too slow. I just don't think it's there. I think the Barra stuff is good as kind of like a subset in a deck as an alternative, because I think Black Cells is so easily shut down right now by Frozen Solid and Greyjoy's Shipwrights and Vic and all that craziness that if you're focusing is that your only way to win the game, I don't think that's the way to go. But if you have it as a subset in a Prince That Was Promised deck or something like that, I think it's could be effective.
Yeah, I don't do much Shadows. So my vote would probably just go out to Targ, just because what I know of Shadows is it's very costly, and Hisdar gives you 3 gold like every phase. So, I mean, that seems pretty solid. But kind of like what Tyler said, I mean, Black Cells could just be thrown like into a Baratheon deck. You don't have to build around it. So it feels like, you know, Tyrell and Lannister, they're really pushing like, hey, and this is the Shadow decks. Like, we want these two factions to be the Shadows decks. I think they tried that with Martell, and just, like Tyler said, not working. So that's kind of what I have to say about the Shadow stuff. So,
Kyle, you're the other old hat that played Shadows first. How are you feeling about some of these?
Looking at the list, I think Tyrell is the best one. I really like Dragon Pit a lot from like a personal, like me playing. I like the way Lannister and Targ Shadows plays, but I do think Tyrell right now owns the strongest combination of Shadows cards. But Lannister and Targ feel like first dead. I like that.
Has Dragon Pit done okay for you? I know when it dropped, there was some excitement, but then also some trepidation that second edition character strength and Targ's burn package in second ed was going to make Dragon Pit kind of underperform. Has it felt worthwhile to you, or what do you think?
Now, wasn't there like a burn event in Shadows? Didn't you say that one time in life before?
Oh, in first edition? Yeah. Let's see. There was a burn event. I think two different burn. No, sorry. There was a burn event, a burn attachment, and a burn character, if I remember correctly. And then another different kill character that wasn't burned. But anyway.
Yeah. So if you add those three, Dragon Pit sounds really good. So yeah. I don't know what's going to happen in the next two packs, you know, in this Shadow cycle. Don't know if they're going to get all three of those, but yeah, if they got like a burn event or, you know, a burn attachment, you know, that would probably help out.
Yeah, I
feel like
I think they're a card away. They need like one nice effect, and I think Dragon Pit could be there.
Okay. Let's see. On to the next one then. This is one we've sort of hinted at with some earlier questions. And this is which of the gate locations are working. So, for reference, that Lion, River, Kings, Flea Bottom Alley gets lumped in with those. Old Gate, Gate of the Gods, Dragon, and Iron Gates.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one we discussed earlier, the Old Gate, I think is probably the best because it's easiest to trigger, followed maybe 1A, 1B with Iron Gate, just because of how easy it is for Koi to win initiative right now. Rivergate I've had some success with, but without Dorne I think it's not nearly as enticing to lose a bunch of challenges all the time.
Yeah. Well, and isn't it is two at all. For a minute there I was thinking it had to be on, but it's two total. Okay.
Two total, yeah. I think Tyrell has seen some play out of theirs, if you're playing Tyrell. The Flea Bottom Alley, you know, probably sees play of at least a one of as an alternative for At the Gate.
Oh, yeah, Flea Bottom Alley, definitely. It's very good.
The Lion Gate almost surely sees play if you're running Lannister in the current meta. The only one that I really don't know a lot about is the Targ one, because I don't know what kind of, you know, it's so dependent on the deck you're running, and I don't know if Targ, Voltron, Danny is the way to go. I don't know.
Does that have to be Targ event or Targ attachments, or is it any attachment?
Any attachment.
It's any attachment.
That sweet Targ Maester.
I mean, like, really, that. I mean, I think in general at this point, I mean, especially with the restriction of the trade routes, you know, like, for the most part, when you're building a deck, aren't you, like, having 3x of all these gates for the most part, aside from, like, High Targ and Night's Watch, just for the economy?
Not all of them.
I think it depends on what kind of deck you're running. So, you know, like in a Tyrell Shadows, are you running the one where you have to have the highest strength character in play? Maybe not. You know, Martell.
Oh, yeah, I guess aside from Tyrell, I mean, they have so much gold anyways. Yeah. With the Arbors and Red Rhyme Straits.
They don't really need it on either front.
Yeah.
They have more efficient options either way you slice that.
So, I mean, like, you know, Greyjoy, Stark, probably even Martell. I mean, I think those are probably almost auto 3Xs in those three factions.
Cool. See, I think the three that are heads above the others are Greyjoy and Stark, but I think Night's Watch is the other one in that top spot.
Yeah. So it's, with Night's Watch, like, when I was playing it, I really just played it as a one of, just in case, like, I drew my Gate of the Moon or something like that. So I have that one other option to get out. I mean, you're paying one to drop in a three drop character and draw a card. I mean, it's decent.
I just like it because it's instant value. The other ones, you feel like you have to linger a couple turns before you trigger the draw. It's nice that you can play it and go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with the Age Craftsman, it's like a match made in heaven. So, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense there.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say, like, in general, I'm, like, really impressed with them. I think, like, when I first saw them, I'm like, you know, another location. I don't know if I'm going to play it. And then, like, when you're playing it, like, man, these are, like, really efficient. Like, the pop whenever you need them. Like, much better than the neutral version that they had that rarely probably never sees play. Whatever gate that was.
I think a couple of the Bear Princes decks were running City Gate at Gen Con. Like, as a one or two of for some reason. Hmm.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, clearly Greyjoy and Stark are probably the best two, just because the fact that they can trigger so easy, and just those two style decks just, you know, want a lot of cards, like, early. So, those are definitely good.
So, you know, I would say it's a Night's Watch one, because you literally can trigger it whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's instantly good. Instantly good.
Well, not whenever, right? Isn't it? Doesn't have to be marshalling. Yeah.
It's a marshalling action, yeah.
But there's no condition on it.
Well, and it is worth pointing out that about it being a marshalling action. While it means I can't do silly shenanigans like dropping someone in during challenges, which would be pretty silly awesome. But it is also worth pointing out that card draw during the marshalling phase is a lot stronger than card draw in the challenges phase. So that's definitely something going for it.
Really, they're...
Yeah.
If you think about it, they're almost two different things in how different the functionality is on the cards. It's kind of hard to compare them because they're just completely different in what they are and what they do.
That's fair. It does break that that cycle that the others have. I mean, it's obviously a nod there as Night's Watch's piece of it, but it is wildly different compared to the structure of the others. Okay. Well, let's see what else we got. I think the next one, Kyle was just dying to be the one to read. Question number 9. You're on it.
Oh, I don't get to say it. Do you want me to actually say it? Can I say it? Where are we at in this world?
It's the one you wanted. You had a certain way you wanted to read it.
All right. I mean, there's editing. You're just going to cut all this. Next up is Mary Kill, Raider and Fanatic, Balon and Fanatic, Pinch / Other Raider, Euron.
That one's the last question.
So, which pair, I guess it's talking about which OP restricted combo works best out of Greyjoy. So I guess we get to have intercourse with one, pledge our lives to one, and burn the other to the ground.
There we go. Yeah.
Good way to put that.
Yeah. I think I have, as a fellow Iowan designed it, have to go with making sweet love to Pinch / the Raiders, because that combo is nasty and oppressive when it works. Just the fear. You do it once in a game, the rest of the game they're just terrified the whole way through. And I think with Prince now asking for 5 strength power wins, it's easier to build your deck towards it, and people don't think of it right away. I think they go, oh yeah, you know, he's trying to get his Prince trigger. Like, you don't think about Pinch. It's not always a night flyer. It's not always a night flyer.
I think I also do like that as my F option. But I am going to even branch out and go ahead. Just
no one gives a fuck. Just, we say fuck on this podcast. Though I will say, the other day I had like a flashback to an old Thrones memory. I guess we had some episode where I was in a bad mood and we did a chapter pack review, and the top comment on it was, Kyle must have just got done watching Wolf of Wall Street for how many F-bombs he dropped in that episode.
I do remember that one now. Yeah. Or the comment, at least. Not which episode that was. Good times. Well, I was about to say that I'm also going to branch out to the Mary step. And I'm going to say that I would marry Balon Fanatic because, yeah, it's a little janky, but it's also just that kind of, like, Shaga thing that I love. Just, like, twist the knife. It's maybe not – it's a little gimmicky. It's maybe not, like, just straight-up Jamie-efficient sort of thing, but it's right at that sweet spot that I love of being strong and nasty and also just weird. So. You can process of elimination which one I would kill.
I mean, I'll be with you guys on beeping, bleeping, whatever you guys want to, you know, do with that. I guess the way I looked at it was, all right, Mary, which one do I want to, you know, commit to, like, long term? Like, if I'm going to play this faction for a while, what do I want to commit to? And that was
the
probably
most Shaga option.
And that was probably Balon and Drown God Fanatic. I mean, that's just really good synergy there. I mean, it can change the course of the game. If I was just going to get wild one night, you know, just getting crazy, what should I do? And I'm like, I'm not going to play Drown God Fanatic today because I'm going to play Raider from the Pike. Then, yeah, I'm going to pinch some people. Because, I mean, that's just what I would do on those crazy one-night stands. So that's kind of the way I was looking at it.
You just pinch somebody out of the blue.
Yeah. I mean, I can't have Raider and Drown God Fanatic in the same deck. So, and if I'm not playing Drown God Fanatic, there's probably something wrong with me. So that's why it's just like the one-night stand, like that one night, you know, Vince, you know, said something wrong to me. And I'm like, I'm done with you, Vince, just for one night. I'm going to go try out this Raider again. So, yeah, that's kind of the way I was looking at it. And I don't even remember what the third one was, but that's probably definitely the kill one. What was the third one?
Balon with the Fanatic.
No, that's the one I'm marrying. Balon.
Yeah. Raider Fanatic?
Raider Fanatic.
Raider for now. Well, does that,
what is that,
can't even happen though, because they're both restricted. Unless
Aaron,
I'm missing something in life.
Aaron had this phrased as other Raider, so wait a minute. Yeah, which Raider was that?
Other Raider fanatic.
Let me go double check a trait here. Which I don't play Greyjoy as much as you guys. Surely one of you would know which
I don't know
one
what other Raider means.
I don't know what Balon or
desert?
Raider combos
with. Does he mean
with...
Desert Raider? He probably means Desert Raider.
Because
that's
Raider
a pretty
fanatic
strong
combo
with Fanatic.
Yeah, that's what he means.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll you want to kill that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So wait, now I have to play Martell in the deck?
Yeah. But it's fine. Okay, it's fine. Well, we can choose that one to die because it wants to die anyway.
I mean, it's your Drown God combo.
I'm going to take a different approach on this. And I'm going to kill Raider and Pinch. Because for the rest of the game, as long as Drown God Fanatic and Raider from Pike are on the restricted list, Raider from Pike is dead to me. It's dead to me.
Except for that one night. That one night, something's going to happen.
It made everything
get a little sloppy.
Even if he does me dirty, I'm always going to be coming back for some more.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You heard it here.
You heard it here. Right. Doesn't matter how many Coronas he has.
Oh, Corona.
So, and I think I would definitely marry Balon and Vince.
All right.
Definitely. That just seems like a consistent thing, which means I'm going to have to just bang the shit out of the other one.
Doesn't even know what it is. Just got to bang
it's
it.
Just a duty for
just
Tyler.
Just bang it.
He doesn't enjoy it.
That's
well,
the only thing I can think of is
the
I would
other
have to
there,
be
Kyle.
I'd have to be really intoxicated to play a Greyjoy Banner Sun deck right now. So, the only thing I can think of.
You heard it here first, folks. Tyler's playing Greyjoy Banner Sun at Nationals.
Boom.
Yeah. Tyler'd rather drop dead than a drown guy.
Damn it, Kyle!
Yes!
All right, last question.
Didn't he say prior he was going to say that as many times?
Maybe.
Good.
We're moving on to the next question.
That's what he said.
Next question, it won't be valid anymore. Here's the next one. It's like spy versus spy, only this one is Euron versus Euron. Two Eurons enter, only one Euron leaves. Which one you going for?
Well, I think there's two ways to take this question. The first one is, are we talking about Core Balon versus Bakhti?
Euron.
Or Core Euron versus Bakhti?
Those are the only Eurons, so yes.
Or are we talking about, well, are we talking about when I'm playing Greyjoy Heads Up, which I do all the time now because it's the top deck in the meta, and do I get my Euron first versus getting their Euron first? Because then it becomes interesting, because then it's a question of who wins initiative. So, but I think really, in all practicality, there's only one Euron right now, and it's the one in the box.
The six cost search for silence.
Crazy efficient.
That does seem to be everything now.
Yeah.
That just hurts.
With Greyjoy, you have to think inside the box, not outside.
Oh, I like
exactly.
That.
You know, like, really, though, like, I love Core Euron. Like, just from, like, a card game perspective in like a Game of Thrones, if I like showed you that card, it was like 7 cost, 6 strength, that's rare, 3 icons, renown and pillage, and he's just straight up takes locations like that are in your discard pile. You know what they would say?
It's,
that has to be like a champ card.
It's still super
like,
efficient.
This card's busted. Yeah. Like that's what people would say. Yeah. And then, you know, good old Euron comes strolling through with silence. And it's all like, you first read it, it's like, and I'll admit it. The first time I read it, I'm all like, is that enough to make me not want to play, you know, Core Euron? That's the first thing, like, when I saw the preview of it, I think we was talking in a little chat, Tyler and I. And I'm like, I don't know if that's enough. You know, it just doesn't seem like, man, I wish he had, like, 5 strength or maybe even had, like, the king trait or something like that. Like, is that enough?
It's much.
And it is. It's enough and more. Because he just gets that ship. And then that ship keeps on producing ships. And then you have, like, a fleet of ships. And then someone's going to be like, haha. Yeah, then, like, someone's going to be like, man, I'm going to play Political Disaster because I like to play bad cards. And then you're like, okay, well, I'm going to keep my silence and just keep on putting out ships. And I'll put out more ships. And it's just like, you get hit with Political Disaster and you just keep on putting out ships.
And then Neuron's brother comes along and he says, hey, I'd like to play too. And then you drop him and you have something to use all those ships with.
It's like, we've had more...
No-brainer.
We've had more weird social story interactions this episode than I think we've had in a long time. Hey, and then Asha shows up. She's got 2 beers, feeling a little frisky. She's like, what are you guys doing? Like,
I mean, she does have a history of
I love that everything is told in a hypothetical story now.
You go pillage everything.
Yeah. But I love how, like, really, like, the Euron, Victarion, like, have those synergies together. Because, like, normally you're all like, hey, we have the 6-drop Victarion that had Intimidate and could save himself. But then it's like, oh, well, Euron's just going to get Intimidate. And now you can pair it up with the 7-drop Euron who just have crazy synergy with one another. So now you just lost Core Euron and Casterly Rock Vic to just better upgrades right now. So. And they both stand
together.
I mean, that's just better crazy together, good.
For sure.
Yeah. And then, you know, good old King old Balon in the Solar is like, hey, guys, I could stand too now because someone said I was a prince. So now you have 3 big guys that just keep on standing. I
feel like I'm noticing a real theme here.
Oh, it's great.
A lot of love for Greyjoy. A lot of rumors that it's the best faction and that Greyjoy Prince might be the best deck.
Yeah. As long as they don't go hunting, because we don't want any accidents happening. You know. Yeah, see that? What I did there?
No.
Well played.
No, could you explain that a little bit more?
Like that?
I don't get it.
Well, we're already a little past the hour of shooting.
How much more time we got?
Filler.
In detail.
Oh, so we'll save that for next time. I'll explain it to you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the efficiency right now with Box Euron is just crazy good, especially with what Greyjoy is wanting to do right now, which is like just overwhelm you with their bodies and their ships. So one day, though, good old Core Euron will come back. I don't know when, but it will happen.
Okay.
All right. Well, in that case, let's find out what happens next with a little props and slops. I think we had some slops that Bob was just waiting to throw out there at a certain fast food restaurant.
I mean, I had a slop that was a prop. You know, it was so difficult. So anyways, Quincy, Illinois, not having a whole lot of, you know, ice cream, you know, options in town. So we have the good old fashioned Dairy Queen. Happened to see a commercial one day. Hey, Snickers Blizzard is back. Go to Dairy Queen, get myself a Snickers Blizzard. Got everything besides a Snickers inside that Blizzard. So that's why I'm slopping them. However, it was still delightful. Not knowing what I'm going to get in every bite. I mean, it was everything in there. So that's where I'm propping them, because maybe I got more bang for my buck, because I was getting a lot of different other stuff inside that blizzard. A
lot of different stuff.
So.
That does not reassure me. I like to know what's
yeah.
ice cream. Gosh darn it.
Like, sometimes, like, I felt like, you know, sometimes you'll go to the bar and you're like, hey, I want, like, that, what is it called? Like, the bar rag shot, you know, where they just, like, kind of
I have no idea what you're talking about. Everything in
the bar rag and pour it into a shot glass.
The that rail. And I don't think they actually do that. Yeah, they take the mat and they don't actually do it, I don't think. I've never seen it actually done.
Okay, you've never been to
Quincy, usually they serve some garbage in a shot glass and they're like,
here's,
whatever,
here's the
drink your grog,
well,
I don't give a shit.
You need to come to Quincy then. And I felt like maybe the Dairy Queen worker was like, man, I have like a bunch of just stuff random like on my board because I don't keep it clean. And he just like just shoveled it all in there. I didn't get the Snickers. That's what I envisioned happened that day. So that's my prop to a slop.
And then Euron walked in. He's like, I just want that chicken basket with the gravy and the toast. But Vic was already there. He's like, I got the last one. Yes.
That seems about right, actually.
Yeah. Okay, then.
All right. So that's me. Who else has something?
Yeah. Whew. Boy, I'm gonna throw out some props to She-Ra on Netflix. We finally got around to starting that. And it is actually an incredibly fun little animated show. I can understand why it's become a little bit of a nerd phenomenon lately. And for the record, for anybody else listening that watches this, Entrapta is far and away my favorite character. So, there you go.
Kind of along those same lines, has anyone watched The Boys on Amazon Prime yet?
Oh, I haven't quite
props
finished
to
it.
That.
Yeah.
It's not what I expected it was going to be. I didn't read the book or anything, but
you should read the comic.
My wife and I have been watching it, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And the casting is really good, too.
It is. Though it really killed me to see, what's his name, Simon Pegg in the show, but not be playing Huey, or Wee Huey, as he was known in the comics, because in the comic book, he just is Simon Pegg. Like, the character was modeled after Simon Pegg's appearance, so you just see him in panel after panel after panel. So it, despite the fact that he's a little old to play Huey now, it just hurt to see him in the show and him not be Huey. I would have rather not seen him at all. The slops to that.
That sounds tough, Will.
You know,
hey, really I also want to give some props to Kyle Vansel for spending 4 days with Jeff Brandon and not murdering him. That was awesome. That was awesome.
Jeff's not dead. Jeff's
so
not dead.
So good.
There were moments. It got a little touch and go. We played a best of three series, me and Jeff, just to, you know, prove once and for all that I am by far and away a superior player. And despite Bob's best efforts, giving the most only three clues I've ever seen in my whole life, and Jeff drawing the nuts in two of our games. Yeah, I beat him out and didn't have to kill him, so that was nice. No one needed to die.
Yeah, it was really nice of him to let you win. It was good.
He never let me win.
That's not what he told me after.
Or, I don't know how you keep that last flop. I just don't understand.
I don't know.
So, if he told here me he threw the game, I would kind of believe it, because there's no way that you keep that.
Here comes our negative review on the white book as soon as Jeff Brandon figures out how to do a comment.
I'm not too worried about it.
As long as it's still 5 stars, I'll take it, I think. could be worse than other 5-star reviews we've gotten. Also, dear listeners, you should go rate the show on iTunes.
Bonus points for it being that.
5 stars.
Yeah, bonus points on the 5 stars. Tell you what, if you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, we'll start doing reviewer shout-outs where we read your review and then make assessments about what kind of Thrones player you are.
This sounds
good.
Extremely dangerous. So before we tread too far into this danger zone, I'm going to thank our new co-hosts for making time to join us on here, and then I'm going to close this chapter of the White Book. Make time to join us on.
The word is fuck.
Damn it, Kyle! Now I have to edit that. man. So close. So close.
You can just leave the fuck in there, Will.
Damn it! Kyle's turning into Aaron on me.